Random House Audiobooks presents Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Agents of Chaos 1, Hero's Trial, by James Luceno. If the system's primary was distressed by the events that had transpired on and about the fourth closest of its brood, it betrayed nothing to the naked eye. Saturating local space with golden radiance, the star was as unperturbed now as it was before the battle had begun. Only the conquered world had suffered. Regions that had once been green, blue, or white appeared ash gray or reddish brown. Smoke chimneyed from immolated cities and billowed from tracts of fire-stormed evergreen forests. Deep within the planet's shroud of cinder and debris moved the warship most responsible for the devastation. The vessel was a massive ovoid of Yorick coral, its scabrous black surface relieved in places by bands of smoother stuff, lustrous as volcanic glass. In the pits that dimpled the coarse stretches hid projectile launchers and plasma weapons. Other, more crater-like depressions housed the laser-gobbling Dovin basals that both drove the vessel and shielded it from harm. Farther removed from the battle floated a smaller vessel, black as well, but faceted and polished smooth as a gemstone. From a roost in the underside of its angular snout, a gaunt figure, cross-legged on cushions, beheld these sights without cheer or regret. Necessity had engineered the destruction. What had been done needed to be done. An acolyte stood in the rear of the command roost, relaying updates as they were received by a slender living device fastened to his right inner forearm by six insectile legs.
"Victory is ours, Eminence. Our air and ground forces have overwhelmed the principal population centers. However, our arrival does not please Commander Tla, Eminence. He does not dismiss out of hand the need for sacrifice, but he asserts that the campaign has been successful thus far without the need for religious overseers. He fears that our presence will only confound his task."
"Commander Tla fails to grasp that we engage the enemy on different fronts," Harar said. "Any opponent can be beaten into submission, but compliance is no guarantee that you have won him over to your beliefs."
Harar, a male of middle years, rose and moved to the lip of the roost's polygonal transparency, where he stood with three-fingered hands clasped at the small of his back, the missing digits having been offered in dedication ceremonies and ritual sacrifices as a means of escalating himself. A headcloth, patterned and significantly knotted, bound his long black tresses. The back of his neck showed vibrant markings etched into skin stretched taut by prominent vertebrae. The planet turned beneath him.
"What is this world called?" he asked.
"Obra Sky, Eminence."
"Obra Sky," Harar mused aloud.
A herald of lesser station appeared in the roost, offering salute by snapping his fists to opposite shoulders.
"Belikyor, Eminence. I bring word that the captives have been gathered."
"How many?"
"Several hundred, of diverse aspect. Do you wish to oversee this election for the sacrifice?"
Harar squared his shoulders and adjusted the fall of his elegant robes.
"I am most eager to do so."
The door's diaphanous seal opened on an immense hold packed to the bulkheads with captives taken on and in the skies above Obra Sky. Harar's entourage of personal guards and attendants moved into the hold, followed by the priest himself, perched atop a levitated cushion, one leg folded beneath him, the other dangling over the edge. Well illuminated by bioluminescent patches that rashed the walls and ceiling, the hold had been sectioned off into a score of separate inhibition fields arranged in two parallel rows and maintained by larger Dovin basals. pressed shoulder to shoulder in each field stood scholars and researchers from a host of worlds, humans and others, Bothans, Bith, Quarren, and Kamasi, all jabbering at once in a welter of tongues. Harar hovered on the cushion, surveying the scene with hooded eyes. Some of the prisoners begged for mercy as Harar's cushion carried him toward the closest inhibition field, but most fell silent in stark apprehension. He regarded them indifferently, until his eyes happened on a furred humanoid from whose bulging brow emerged a pair of ringed, cone-shaped horns. Bare hands and feet were hardened by physical labor, but the creature's limpid eyes belied a deep intelligence. The humanoid wore a sleeveless, sack-like garment that fell raggedly to the knees.
"What species are you?"
Harar asked in flawless basic.
"I am Gotul."
Harar indicated the sackcloth.
"Your attire befits a penitent more than a scholar. Which are you?"
"I am both, and I am neither,"
the Gotul said with purposeful ambiguity.
"I am an Hakig priest."
Harar twisted spiritedly on the cushion to address his retinue.
"Good fortune! We have a holy one in our midst."
His gaze returned to the Gotul.
"Tell me something of your religion, Hakig priest."
"What interest could you have in my beliefs?"
"Ah, but I too am a performer of rituals. As one priest to another, then."
"We Hakig believe in the value of simple living,"
the Gotul said plainly.
"Yes, but to what end? To ensure bountiful harvests? To escalate yourself? To secure a place in the afterlife?"
"Virtue is its own reward."
Harar adopted a puzzled look.
"Your gods have said as much?"
"It is simply our truth, one among many."
"One among many. And what of the truth the Yuzhong Vong bring you? Aver that you recognize our gods, and I may be inclined to spare your life."
The Gotul stared at him dispassionately.
"Only a false god would thirst so for death and destruction."
"Then it's true. You fear death."
"I have no fear of a death suffered in the cause of truth, the alleviation of suffering, or the abolishment of evil."
"Suffering?"
Harar leaned menacingly toward him.
"Let me tell you of suffering, priest. Misery is the mainstay of life. Those who accept this truth understand that death is the release from suffering. That's why we go willingly to our deaths, for we are the resigned ones."
He scanned the captives and raised his voice.
"We ask no more of you than we do ourselves, to repay the gods for the sacrifices they endured in creating the cosmos. We offer flesh and blood so that their work might endure."
"Our god demands no tribute other than good acts,"
the Gotul rejoined.
"Acts that raise calluses,"
Harar said in disdain.
"If this is all that is expected of you, it's no wonder your gods have abandoned you in your time of need."
"We have not been abandoned. We still have the Jedi."
Murmurs of fellowship moved through the throng of captives.
"These Jedi are your gods?"
Harar asked. The Gotul took a moment to answer.
"The Jedi Knights are the trustees of peace and justice."
"And this force I have heard about, how would you describe it?"
The Gotul grinned faintly.
"It is something you will never touch.
Although, if I didn't know better, I would swear you were sprung from its dark side." Harar's interest was piqued.
"The force contains both light and dark?"
"As do all things."
"And which are you with regard to us? Are you so sure you embody the light?"
"I know only what my heart teaches."
Harar deliberated.
"Then this struggle is more than some petty war. This is a contest of gods in which you and I are but mere instruments."
The Gotul held his head high.
"That may be so, but the final judgment is already decided."
Harar sneered.
"May that belief comfort you in your final hour, priest, which, I assure you, is close at hand."
Again he addressed the multitudes.
Up until now, your species have faced only Yuzhong Vong warriors and politicians. As of today...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?